Okay.
So we are holding on Chof Aleph on the Bay, 10 lines from the end of the narrow line. Line begins Tam. We're holding at the end of the line. So we started talking yesterday about the dinim of lighting the candles on Hanukkah, which we got into by way of the Mishnah had told us that there were various wicks and oils that you're not allowed to use for Shabbos candles, and we had a three-way machlokas. What about as far as Hanukkah? We had Rav Huna saying that you're not allowed to use those same wicks and oils on Hanukkah at all, neither on Shabbos Hanukkah, nor on the weekdays of Hanukkah. We have Rav Chista saying you're allowed to use them on the weekdays of Hanukkah, but not Shabbos Hanukkah. And then we have Rav, who said that you're allowed to use them both the weekdays and Shabbos of Hanukkah, which is the halacha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we started talking about the dinim of lighting the menorah, when you light it, how many you light. But now let's continue. Turn it up on. Now let's talk about where you light it. The mitzvah of the Hanukkah lights is that you light them on the outside door of your house. So Rashi gives a scenario. Let's say, for example, that a person has, the typical arrangement in those days was that their house opens to a chaser, and then their chaser opens in turn out to a mulri, which opens out to the shatarabim. So Rashi says what it would be is to be lighting it by the door of his chaser. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that no, if there's a chaser, then actually you should be lighting it on the outside door of the chaser, closer to Rosh Hashanah, because the whole point is that the people in Rosh Hashanah should be seeing it. So Tosfos learns that in Rashi's scenario, you would do it in that case. The case where we say that you would do it by the entrance of your house is if your house opens directly into Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Anyway, so that's the proper place to put it. Im hoya dor ba'aliyah, suppose a person lives on the second floor of a house, so he doesn't have a direct door that goes out to Rosh Hashanah, but there's no particular place in the chaser that has to do specifically with his house. Then he puts it in a window that faces Rosh Hashanah. So nowadays, you have many people who, in a time of danger, for example, Rashi gives an example, the Persians who ruled over Babel in those days had a religion that included, they worshipped fire, and they had a rule that on certain holidays of theirs, you were only allowed to have fires in their temples. So they would actually go around and then prevent people from having fires outside their houses on those days. So that would be an example. Obviously, other examples are if you have a curfew or if you have hostile goyim who are going to put it out. Or for that matter, the Aruch HaShulchan says also, practically speaking, you have the weather. You know, in Europe and in North America, usually Hanukkah time is not really the weather to have things outdoors. So then you just put the menorah on your table, and that's good enough. And then you yotze. So we have many people have the minhag nowadays to light by their window, based on the Gemara over here. The Rebbe talks about in some letters that it depends really. I mean, if you're living in a first floor, then fine. But then you still might as well put it by your door, out facing out towards your shadabim. If you live on a higher floor, not necessarily is it such an advantage to put it in the window anyway, because then we're going to be more than 20 amos above your shadabim, and we're going to learn soon in the Gemara that above 20 amos nobody's going to notice it anyway. So then you might as well. So that's the reason why, in general, our minhag is to light it by the doorway, as the Gemara is going to say soon, and rather than by the window. Also, the Rebbe talks about in some of these letters that sometimes you have menorahs with backs, and what do you do if you put it in the window? If you have a back facing outward, then nobody from outside is going to see the menorah anyway. And if you face the back inward, then you're not going to be seeing the candles of the menorah. So that's another reason why. That's another reason why, other things being equal, we usually put it by the door.
Outside, or we put it inside the door.
So if you're on a first floor or whatever, then yeah, you can.
No, even if you're on like a tall tower.
No, then it's not. But maybe you have some poskim who say that. My son's pointing out that suppose you live in a tall building, but suppose you have other neighbors across from you who are at the same height as you. Then if you put it in the window, they'll see it. That's true, and there are some poskim who take the view that's sufficient. But not everybody agrees to that. So primarily it should be visible by the B'nai Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Anyway, so that's right. In general, our minhag is we put it by the door. We try to, if possible, we put it by the door facing outside towards the street. If we can't, practically speaking, many of us live in houses where it's not really arranged properly for that, so then we just put it by an interior door. Because after all, our Gemara is saying that if need be, you can just put it on your table. Okay. The Rava says, when you have the menorah in your house, you have to have another candle nearby in order to use the light of it. Because since we said before that Rav had said that you're not allowed to use the light of it, so therefore, so you need another candle nearby. Rashi says anyway, you need a heker because you need it to be noticeable that you lit the light for the mitzvah. If you don't have another one nearby that you're using for regular light, then it's not noticeable. People just see there's a light in your house. Okay, well, it's at nighttime. Everybody needs lights in their house. The E ikamadura continues rather if there was a bonfire in your house, you have a fire in the fireplace, for example, loitzorich, then you don't need, because the fact that you have the fire there, that's enough. You're able to use the light of that. So then when you're lighting a separate lamp for Hanukkah, then it's recognizable that you're doing it for the mess. However, the E adam choshegu, but if the person is an important person and he doesn't usually use the light of his fireplace, he usually has other lights in his house as well, then apagabdi ikamadura, even if there is a fire there, Sarach Neracheret, he still needs another candle, another lamp over there, again, to be recognizable that he has one. So he'll have, in other words, at that point, he'll have three sources of light in his house. He'll have the fire, but he being an Odom Kosher, that just serves him for warmth, but not for light. He has one for light in his house, and one for the mitzvah, and one for the mitzvah of Hanukkah. The Bachak, so this is, by the way, it's based on this, that we have the concept of having a shamash near the menorah, with the idea being that way you have another candle over there to make it recognizable this way. When you're using this way, if you're using the light, you're using the light of the shamash, not so much of the menorah. Although the Bach actually disagrees and says even that might not be good enough to be makir you to do anything near the menorah. He says maybe the Gemara is only talking about over here in the case we're talking about where it's a time of danger and you're lighting your menorah inside on your table, then there's no choice. Inevitably, you're going to end up using some kind of light over there. So then the least worst thing to do is put another light nearby, so at least you can use that. But the Bach says, other than that, if you're lighting it by the outside door of your house, as you're supposed to, then even putting a shamash or some other candle over there wouldn't help to sit next to there and do work. Okay, so the Gemara says, my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? Meaning all this time we've been talking about Hanukkah, but Rashi says the question is, what nest did they establish Hanukkah for? Now we know, that's where, you know, when the Gemara is going to tell us the story briefly, but we know that there were a lot of nisim that happened then. They defeated the Greeks, they found the oil, they lit for 8 days. Which nest is it that primarily they made the Yom Tov of Hanukkah for? The Ran has a different explanation, which is the question is, why is it called Chanukah? Chanukah, one of the meanings of it is we can break it down to Chonu Chokhei. They camped, meaning they rested on the 25th. So what exactly happened on the 25th of Chanukah? So like this, the Tanna Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. In Megillah Tainis, we talked about in the previous parak about how Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Goron wrote Megillah Tainis, which is a list of the various days when nisim and great things happen to the Jewish people, mostly during the time of the second Beis Mikdash. So this that we're going to quote is called a Megillah Tainis.
So the Braisa, where'd you get that from, Alexander, that he wrote the list of great things? Where is that mentioned?
We learned that in the previous parak. We learned how Dr. Gimel on the base. We talked about how the Zichnei Beis Shammai and Zichnei Beis Hillel went up to the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Goron, and that was where they were going to the 18th, the Yud Ches Devarim, that we learned about in the previous parak. So the Gemara had said over there, Mikos of Megillah Tainis, Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Sayyakim. So Megillah Tainis is a list of about 30-odd days or groups of days during the year when various great things happen to the Jewish people during the time, mostly during the time of the second Beis Mikdash, and this that we're going to quote here in the Gemara as a quotation from there.
And that's so where we know that Hanukkah was mentioned in that list.
Right, so it's mentioned in Megillah Tainis, and the Gemara is quoting it from there. Beginning on the 25th of Kislev, or the 8 days of Hanukkah, you're not allowed to make a spadim on those days. You're not allowed to fast on those days. Why? What happened? What was the special thing that happened? When the Greeks entered the Hechel, timu kolashmanim shebehechel, they made all the oil in the Hechel tamei. When the kingdom of Beit Hashmonai became stronger and defeated them, and they recaptured the Beit Mikdash, they checked around the Beit Mikdash, they found only one jug of oil that was lying there sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, showing therefore that nobody had touched the contents of it. So there was only enough in there to light for one, enough oil to light for one day. We have to remember that each day they needed a half a lug of oil for each of the seven lamps of the menorah. So they needed each day 3.5 lugim of oil. A lug is roughly a pint, give or take. So you're talking around a half a gallon. So they found this thing only had about a half a gallon of oil in it, enough to light the seven lamps of the menorah for one night. And they were able to light with it for 8 days. Why do they need 8 days? You have two famous explanations of Rishonim. The Ram says because the place where they prepared new oil was 4 days trip away from Yerushalayim. So 4 days going and 4 days returning, 8 days total. The Beis Yosef gives a different reason. He says because they were all tummy mess from having fought in the wars and killed Greeks over there. So they were all tummy mess. They need 7 days to become Tahor and 1 day to make new oil. So therefore, either way, 8 days.
From the fact that it mentions that it was sealed, therefore we know that it's a Keli Cheres?
It may have been a Keli Cheres. It may have been the fastest it was, because otherwise if they touched the outside of it, it would become Tomei.
That's right.
Actually, Tosfos points out another point over here. Tosfos points out like this. If we say, we know we learned in the previous Cheres that there's a Gzera of the Chachamim that Goyim are considered like Zavim. So if we say that Zera already existed at that time, which may well be the case, then how would it help that it was still sealed? The fact is the Goyim might have touched the Keli, moved the Keli, and the din is that if a Zav moves something, he makes it Tomei, even if it's sealed. So how does it help? The Tosfos answers that evidently what it must be is they found it in the ground. So the fact that it was buried in the ground shows that nobody had moved it. Because otherwise it wouldn't have been in the same place that it had been before. There's actually one of the piyutim, which in some kehillos they say on Shabbos Hanukkah, which mentions that they found it in the shisin under the mizbeach. We have the drainage pipes that went under the mizbeach where the blood and the wine and whatever drained into. There's something that it mentions over there that they found this jug in the shisin. So in that case, finding it over there and finding it still sealed showed that the Yevonim hadn't touched it or moved it.
But the Raisai could have been used, even if it had been moved, right?
So there is actually, well, not only that, but actually even if they had opened it, the fact is a number of the Mephoshim point out the halacha is, we know Tumah Dechuya B'Tzibur or Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur as the case may be. So technically, even if they hadn't been able to find pure oil, they still would have been allowed to light with the oil that they found, that with any oil that they found that was Tomei, because it's the Tibur. So there are Mephoshim, we'll talk about it. Maybe it's different with the menorah versus other korbanos, but the consensus of most of the Mephoshim is that yes, they could have. However, they wanted to go the extra mile. We talked about yesterday in connection with the fact that with Hanukkah you have Mahadrin, Minha Mahadrin, unlike with most other mitzvahs where you don't have three levels of doing the mitzvah. Here with Hanukkah, we said we have three different levels of doing it because they wanted to go the extra mile to do the mitzvah in the best possible way and not to use heterim such as Tumah Dechuya B'Tzibur. And therefore, Hashem reciprocated, and Hashem also, they explain, Hashem wanted to show that with the nest over here that the Jewish people are still precious to him, that he's doing all these nissim for their sake, and he wants them to be on a high level again, and therefore he made it possible for them to find this one jug that was sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, and that way they would be able to do the mitzvah in the best possible way without needing any compromises.
Maybe.
The thing is, that answers the fact about the actual oil. What about the oil the yin that was still tummy?
So the fact that they that's one thing. So first of all, I mean, that's the basic reason why they needed 8 days, is because it took 8 days, it took 7 days for them to become Tahor and then 1 day to press new oil. But you're asking how they
lit it. But they lit it right away.
You're asking how they lit it in the first place. First of all, not everybody was Tomei necessarily, but second of all, even if everybody was Tomei, there are possibilities. Different Mephoshim talk about they might have lit it, for example, using a long stick, and in that case, a stick, particularly eight, is not makabel Tumah, so they might have been able to light it that way.
But how did they have the menorah if the Greeks? Didn't they take the menorah and hide it or destroy it?
You actually have a Gemara in Menachos and in some other places that mentions that they didn't have the golden menorah. You're right. What they did is they took eight, they took seven rather, they took seven iron sticks and plated them with tin so they at least look a little nicer, and they made a makeshift menorah out of that. And that's what they lit in. Later on, eventually, over time, eventually they were able to make one out of silver, and then eventually they became rich enough to make a new one out of gold again. You have, by the way, Eliana, want to say something?
Yeah, maybe there's more that are not turned by the Greeks, but they weren't sealed because the Jew before the Greeks took over already.
It's possible. It's possible. Whatever it is. There is, by the way, there is in this connection the very famous explanation that Rebbe said over and over in Sichas and Maimonides and whatever, that the deeper idea behind this is why are we saying the Greeks were metame all the oil? Why did they spill it out? Why did they destroy it or whatever? Because they wanted to put the Jews in a position where the same way as they wanted to say as far as the Torah, go ahead, learn your Torah, keep your mitzvahs, but as long as you do it only because they're rational, only because they're understandable by the human brain, not just because Hashem said so. That's what we say in Alanism. We say, Vashtichem Torah Secha Olavir Mechukir Tenecha, that they want to take us away from learning Torah and doing mitzvahs because they're Hashem Torah and mitzvahs. So in the same way they wanted that the oil, which oil represents chachma, that the oil that we use for the menorah should be infected with their Greek tumah, and we're going to use it, but they weren't going to put up with that, and they looked around until they found the one jug of oil that was tahor, representing the pure chachma of Torah that's not infected by this Greek culture and by this Greek rationality, and that's what they used to light the menorah. And that's the basis of the next Hanukkah and of the Yom Tov Hanukkah. By the way, you have in this connection the very, very famous question of the Beit Yosef, why Hanukkah is 8 days. If they had a 1 day supply of oil, then it means the net lasted for only 7 days. So, of course, you have, famously, the Beit Yosef himself gives a couple of answers, including that one answer is that they divided up the oil into 8 portions so they'd have a little bit for each day, and still burnt the entire night, even though it was 1/8 of the amount, or if they made thinner wicks, et cetera. There's the Beit Yosef himself gives 3 explanations, and then there's various achronim after him give some of those. There's an explanation that they poured in the whole thing and only some of it burnt each night, right? There's hundreds of different explanations since the Beit Yosef that have been given for that. There was a sicha actually in Chelek Tesvav where the Rebbe analyzes this and said, there's also a Rishimus related to that, where the Rebbe analyzes this and based on various considerations in halacha and whatever, and concludes that basically what it was is the oil burnt and didn't burn at the same time. In other words, on the one hand, it burnt because it has to be shemen zayizach, it has to be actual olive oil that burns in the menorah. On the other hand, it didn't burn because there had to be enough left for the rest of the night. So it's sort of like it's one of these things. It's something beyond teva where it burns and doesn't burn at the same time. It's sort of like you have the way the aron takes up space and doesn't take up space in the Kodesh HaKadoshim at the same time. All right, let's continue. We could sit here a long time and fabring on every line of this Gemara, but we have ground to cover. So the Gemara continues, L'shona acheres kvom, the next year they fixed this as a Yom Tov, V'asom, Yom Tovim, B'halol V'hidah, the Chachamim of that time declared it a Yom Tov for all time, where we say Hallel each day and where we thank Hashem by saying Al HaNitzim. So that's the story of Hanukkah in a nutshell. Okay. So now we mentioned yesterday there's no Masechta of Mishnayos that deals with the Dinim of Hanukkah, unlike the Purim, but you have Hanukkah is mentioned in a few places here and there in Mishnayos. So now the Gemara is going to quote such a Mishnah from Bava Kamma and analyze it and see if we can derive a halacha of Hanukkah today. Shnanhasam, we learn in a Mishnah in Bava Kamma. Des hayos mitachas apatish, if a spark comes out from under the hammer. So you have, for example, imagine a blacksmith or something is banging on the metal with his hammer, and it causes strikes. It strikes sparks that fly off. So if one of those sparks goes out, the yot of a hizik, and it goes out of the place where you're doing the work and causes damage, chayev, then the blacksmith is chayev for the damage. Continues the mission. Gomel shaton pishton. Suppose you have a camel carrying a load of flax. This camel driver and his camel are walking in Rishas Rabim. His flax goes into the store. In other words, it's overburst. It's a huge bundle of flax. But some of it sticks in through the window or through the door of the store. The dolker b'nei shalchan b'ni, and it catches on fire from the storekeeper's light. The Hidlakas Abiran causes the whole building to burn down. Balagomo higher than the one who has the owner of the donkey, the driver of not the donkey, of the camel, is higher because he should have been more careful to make sure that his flax is bundled up properly, that it doesn't stick into the window or through the door. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, suppose the other way around, suppose the storekeeper didn't have his lamp out inside on his counter like he's supposed to, suppose he had it outside, so now the storekeeper is the one who's chayev because he was careless with that. He shouldn't have put the lamp outside where things like flax or whatever could catch on fire from it. Rabbi Yehuda says, if it was a ner chanukah that he had outside, then he's potter because he's supposed to have it in Rosh Hashanah. We said before, he's supposed to have it outside. He said he's supposed to have it outside his door. Amar Ravina Mishmei de Rabba. So Ravina says in the name of Rabba, or on the side over here, it says really it's supposed to be in the name of Rabba. Zois Eimeres, from this Mishnah we see, Ner Chanukah Mitzvah La'anicha B'seich Hasara. The ideal way of doing the Mitzvah is to put the Ner Chanukah within 10 Tfachim of the ground. The Sakhagaitach L'mayla Ma'asara, because if you're going to say that it can be above 10 Tfachim, Lemalay, then the camel driver should be able to say to the storekeeper, okay, very nice, it was Chanukah, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, you should be potter because it's Chanukah, but who said you had to put it so low down? Lemalay, hoyel halan niachlik milam igomo v'roichloy. He should have told him, you should have put your Chanukah lamp higher up than the height of a camel plus its load. Who told you? You could have put it up way further up on the side of the building, and then my flax wouldn't get anywhere near it. So maybe you should still be responsible. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda is saying he's not responsible seems to imply that the Ner Chanukah has to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. However, the Gemara says that's not a solid proof. The Dilma, in Mitra Chalei Tuva, maybe you could say, maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. It could be anywhere up to 20 amas, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute. But the Dilma, in Mitra Chalei Tuva, but maybe Rabbi Yehuda is taking a view, if you're matriach the guy too much, if you're going to say that you can't put your Hanukkah lamp so low down, you have to climb up on a ladder and put it all the way up higher than a camel and its load, ultimately, during the mitzvah, he may just say, no one, it's too much of a bother, and I'm not going to do the mitzvah at all. Maybe, in other words, in principle, he could have put it higher, but the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is not going to matriach him to put it that high. The Rambam actually does not mention the Rambam does not mention this concept of Ner Chanukah having to be within 10 tefachim of the ground. So according to the Rambam, since the Gemara has refuted the proofs and there's no reason to say that halacha, in Shulchan Aruch, on the other hand, it does bring it. So the halacha is ideally you do put your menorah within 10 tefachim of the ground, but if you can't for whatever reason, then it's fine, and then it's fine, and you can put it anywhere below 20 amos. As far as the halacha in that Mishnah, by the way, the reason why the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda is not because they say that he doesn't have any business putting his Ner Chanukah outside. They agree his Ner Chanukah should be outside, but the Gemara explains over there that the Chachamim say, very nice, you want to put your menorah outside, by all means do that, but then sit there and watch it, and if you see a camel coming by with a load of flax or whatever, then move it so that it doesn't catch on fire. There's an interesting Rishimah where the Rebbe analyzes this whole din, al pi chassidus, al pi avoda. He explains that the camel over here represents, the camel has one simen tumah and one simen tara. We know that the camel is one of the four animals that the Torah mentions that has one simen of being kosher and one that not. So therefore it represents like the halfway point, like klipas noga, between kedusha and tumah. It's in Rishus HaRabim, which is what the light of Hanukkah is supposed to illuminate. Normally what happens is if his flax, which his flax represents the unrefined things of Olam Hazeh, if it goes into the store, then that's his problem. He's wrong in doing that. He has to keep that out of the store until it gets refined into something that people can wear, like linen. So therefore he'd be chayev. On the other hand, we say if the storekeeper has his lamp outside representing the idea like he's going too far with his level of avodah, he's like trying to burn down and destroy the whole outside world with his level of avodah, then he's responsible. He's not supposed to do that. He has to keep his fire of kedusha within proper bounds. But Rabbi Yehuda says, if it's the Ner Chanukah, which represents Mesiras Nefesh, then you can't hold him responsible for that. A person going on Mesiras Nefesh, you can't expect him to stay within bounds. Whereas the Chachamim answer to that, very nice, you are going on Mesiras Nefesh by all means, but even so, your Mesiras Nefesh has to be Yeshev B'Yishmo. You still have to sit, you still have to be a Siyashvus, you still have to be with a certain way where your Mesiras Nefesh is not going to destroy the whole outside world, but rather work to refine it. That's the, that Rebbe explains in Rishimus there, the deeper, I mean, the more to it than that, so you can look in Rishimus Chagaras Chavdeh, but that's the gist of it. Okay. Getting back to the Gemara. Amar of Kahana. Dorash Rav Nosson Baman Yumi Meshmeidet Rav Tanfum. Rav Nosson Baman Yumi Darshin, in the name of Rav Tanfum, gave a public drasha that said, Ner Shal Chanukah Sheinichah L'mayla Mishchof Amma, if you put the Ner Chanukah higher than 20 Amos, Psula, then it is possible because nobody notices it, Kisukah Ukamavri. The same concept applies to a sukkah, where we say in the first Mishnah in sukkah that if a sukkah is higher than 20 Amos, it's possible because you're not going to notice the Kach. Actually, the Gemara there in Sukkah mentions three possible reasons why it should be possible, but the accepted reason is based on the idea that you're not going to notice the schach. And the same thing with a mavri, if you have, as we learned briefly in the previous credit, you have the case where you have a koda, you have a horizontal beam across the entrance of a mavri to allow you to carry inside the mavri. If the beam is higher than 20 amos off the ground, then it's also possible for the same reason nobody notices it. So the same thing with Ner Chanukah can't be higher than 20 amos, which is, of course, why we have nowadays that the public menorahs are no higher than about 30 feet. The Omer of Kahana, author of Kahana says, Dorash Rav Nosson Baman Yumi Meshmeidet Rav Tanchum, Mai Dichtir Bahaboy Reik Ein Boy Mayim. What does it mean in connection with the story of Yosef when it says the pit was empty, the pit that they threw Yosef into, the pit was empty, there was no water in it. Why does it need to say both? Mimash Mashanema Bahaboy Reik Ein Yadesh Ein Boy Mayim. Once it says it was empty, automatically we know there's no water in it. Ella, Matam Abayma, Ein by Mayim. So what does it mean? There was no water in it. From there we learn, Mayim Ein by, there was no water in it. Avon Lachoshim, Vakrabim Yeshbo, but there were snakes and scorpions in it. Now, a number of the Mephoshim explain, in that case, then what is Reuven telling them to throw Yosef into there? What good is it going to do? If there are snakes and scorpions, he's still going to be in danger. So one
and number two, why do you say it's wreck when there's scorpions and snakes?
Okay,
it's not right.
Okay, so one second. Well, the snakes and scorpions are like in crevices in it or whatever. But anyway, one answer is actually based on why is the Gemara bringing this in here anyway? So on the face of it, the Gemara is bringing it in because the Gemara often does that. When we have one thing from a certain Amora in the name of another one, so often the Gemara brings other things. Since we had that Rav Kahana had said that Rav Nosson Baman Yumi, Darshan, the name of Rav Tanchum, the din about the menorah, then also we have another one that Rav Kahana says that Rav Nosson Baman Yumi Darshan in the name of Rav Tanchum about this pit. So that's the straightforward reason, but also some of the Mephoshim explain, the vote is, just like we're saying, that the menorah for Hanukkah can't be taller than 20 amos because nobody's going to notice it, the same thing, this pit was deeper than 20 amos. Therefore, the fact that there were snakes and scorpions in it, Reuven did not realize that. If he had realized, of course, he wouldn't tell them to throw Yosef into the place. It would be dangerous. But because it was more than 20 amos deep, he himself didn't notice it, and therefore he told them to throw him in there, figuring at least it's empty of water, he'll be safe, not realizing that, in fact, because it was deeper, there were snakes and scorpions in it. There is actually a very interesting explanation that the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says on the Pasuk. The gist of it is that he says, we find that when it comes to Hashem doing nisim for tzaddikim, it's easier, so to speak, for Hashem to do a nes that doesn't involve interfering with somebody's bechir or chopshit. For Hashem to interfere with somebody's free choice is a very, very rare thing. And even a tzaddik is not always going to be zoichet to that. So therefore, he says, the verse is, Reuven knew that there are snakes and scorpions in the pit, not like the previous explanation, but he took the view, you know what? If Yosef deserves to have a nest happen for him, it's more likely that a nest will happen, that Hashem will prevent the snakes and scorpions from biting him, rather than that Hashem would do a nest to prevent the Shvatim, his brothers, who after all have the Chir HaKapshes, from harming him. And therefore Reuven figures that he's better off with the snakes and scorpions, which don't have the Chir HaKapshes, and therefore Hashem is more likely to protect Yosef from them. There is, aside from all of that, there is a sticha also in Chelek Tesvav where the Rebbe talks about the deeper reason why this piece is here in the Gemara in the middle of the story of Hanukkah, and the Rebbe explains the idea that, again, just like we said with the Yevonim, where their whole idea, the whole thing they were trying to accomplish, is to get that the Jewish people are going to look at Torah as just another science or something, as just something that we do rationally, not because Hashem said so. So that's another word. So when you don't, in other words, that ever develops the idea. When we're saying over here, the pit didn't have water, but it had snakes and scorpions, it's like it's an automatic thing. If a pit, meaning a, representing a person, does not contain Torah, does not contain the proper water of Torah, automatically it's going to have snakes and scorpions in it because there's no middle ground with Torah. Either you learn Torah as Chochmas Ratzono Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as Hashem's will and wisdom, or you end up full of the dangerous snakes and scorpions of Greekness and of Goyishkeit in general. So therefore, that's what that's doing over here. That's what this Gemara is doing over here, representing that to a certain extent, the Shvatim were going in the wrong way like that. They were misjudging Yosef, and therefore, instead of having the water of Torah, they had the snakes and scorpions. And therefore, that's what we're saying. In other words, is that was the danger that the Greeks presented to the Jewish people. They were trying to replace the water of Torah, which risked what would eventually be snakes and scorpions, and the Hashmonaim successfully fought against that. All right, continues the Gemara.
What seems difficult to understand is that they were the sons of Yaakov, and as such, they had a pretty good idea of what's Kedusha.
That's true.
I mean,
but nevertheless, in this particular case, they allowed their dislike for Yosef to affect. That ever actually brings in that sikha in Chedek Tesvav, that ever brings from Medrash, that says that actually when it says V'habor Reik Ein by mine, it represents the idea that at that point they were empty of Torah. And at that point, by misjudging Yosef and thinking that they should kill him, they had emptied themselves of Torah. And therefore, based on what the Gemara is saying over here, automatically they're full of dangerous snakes and scorpions.
So can we derive from this story that even being the son of a tzaddik, a big tzaddik, a huge tzaddik, doesn't prove in and of itself that you think in along the ways of Torah and you to act along the ways of Torah?
That's true. As we learned in Brachas, a person should never trust in themselves till the day they die, because Yochanan Kohen Gadol, who is either the father or the grandson of Matisyahu, speaking of the Hashmonaim, ended up becoming a tzaddiki after 80 years as Kohen Gadol. So yeah, no, a person should never trust in themselves, and certainly not just because they're a son of a tzaddik. You know, in Lubavitcher history, right? We have, for example, look at Berko, the Shalom. You know, he was the grandson of the Friedrich Rebbe. You can find tremendous things that the Friedrich Rebbe hopes and wishes for him in various sichas, and you see what became of him, right? So, yeah. All right. Omer Rabbi, Ner Chanukah mitzvah la'anicha b'tefach ha'samuch l'pesach. Rabbi says, the Ner Chanukah, you have the proper mitzvah is to put it in the tefach closest to the doorway. So you're putting it, for example, we said before, you're putting it in your chaser or in your shoser abim. It should be within the tefach closest to the doorway. Otherwise, if you have it further away, it's not recognizable necessarily that you put it there. The heicha manachlei, okay, which side of the door should you put it on? Rav Acha Brei D'Rabba Amar Miyamin. Rav Acha Brei D'Rabba says you should put it on the right side. Rav Shmuel B'Difti Amar Mismoel. Rav Shmuel B'Difti says you should put it on the left side. The Hilchasa on the bottom line, Halacha Mismoel, you should put it on the left side. That way you'll have the Ner Chanukah will be on the left and the Mezuzah will be on the right. And that way when you walk through the door, you're surrounded by mitzvahs. And that's, of course, how we do it. Okay. And here's the thing, Mara. Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, Amar Rav. Also, lahartis mois kinegan ner chanukah. You're not allowed to count out coins in front of the ner chanukah. Now, we actually had before, we had on Chaf Aleph on the days, which we learned on Friday, we learned that Rav had said that you're not allowed to use the ner chanukah. So you actually have a machlokas rishonim. Is Rav Asi arguing with, now we have an argumara over here, it says Omar Rav, but it's in parenthesis because in fact the Rosh takes it out. So is this statement that we're saying over here, you're not allowed to count out money in front of the Ner Chanukah, is that disagreeing with what Rav says? Namely, one way of looking at it, the Baal HaMor understands there is in fact a machlokas. Rav would say you can't use the Ner Chanukah for anything, even, for example, to learn Torah by it. Whereas Rav Asi would be saying you can't use it for a mundane purpose like counting out money. So according to that, there might actually be a machlokas. Rav would hold you'd be allowed to learn Torah, let's say, by the light of the menorah of Hanukkah, and Rav Asi would be saying that you're allowed to learn Torah, you're just not allowed to count money, for example. And then you have various other Rishonim. You have the Ran and the Rosh, who say that they're not necessarily arguing. Rav Asi is mentioning the example of counting out money. because it's a very short-term thing. He counts out money really quickly, and even such a thing as also, but not necessarily to say that he would disagree with Rab that you can't do something longer-term as well. And then the Rosh also talks about that there also there's a difference between there's a difference between also something that you're doing that takes a while versus something that takes a couple of minutes, but it's a matter of bizoyim, like we're saying over here. Okay. The actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that we don't use the Ner Chanukah for anything, even for example to learn Torah. Again, as we said before, we have a shamash there, with the idea being that if you're going to end up using the light, you'll use the light of the shamash. Although even that, the Bach is not really so happy with that idea either. Okay.
One question, if you put the Ner of Chanukah outside your home, facing the mezuzah, or inside your home, and you leave the door open?
The proper way, we're saying in the Gemara over here, is you put it outside your door, but you put it within a tefach of the door. In fact, now, in places where they have a more moderate climate, Chanukah time, and where there's no danger of goyim, for example, you can find in many places in Eretz Yisrael, they do that. They have glass boxes outside their door, and they put the menorah inside that.
Yeah, but I'm talking here in
here in Kut Forest, in general, we don't light outside. We usually light inside our houses in the doorway, but we still light within a tefach of the doorway, and we light on the side opposite the menorah.
So inside the doorway.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So let's continue. So we said again, Rabbi Hoda had said the name of Rav Asi that you're not allowed to count out money in front of the Ner Chanukah. So Rabbi Hoda says when I told this din over to Shmuel. Amali, so Shmuel says to me, "V'chiner kedusha yeshba." What would be the problem? Is there kedusha in the light of Hanukkah to the extent where you're not allowed, where you wouldn't be allowed to count out money in front of it? Rabbi Yosef says, "Well, why not? You could ask the same thing. V'chidam kedusha yeshba. You could ask the same thing when you shecht a wild animal or a bird, and you have to do the mitzvah of kisui adam. The blood itself doesn't have any intrinsic kedusha either. And yet, the Tanya, and yet we learn in a brisa when the pasuk says v'shofach v'chita, the pasuk says you spill out the blood of the wild animal or the bird, and then you cover it." Meaning, the same part of your body that you shecht it with is the same part that you should be covering the blood with, from which we learn, you should not be covering the blood with your foot, in other words, don't kick dirt over the blood, in order that mitzvahs are not something that you treat in a degrading way. So therefore, we see that even though the blood in and of itself has no intrinsic kedusha, still, you're not allowed to just kick the dirt over it, not because it has intrinsic kedusha, but because you would be treating the mitzvah casually. Halchinami, the same thing you could say over here. Fine, maybe the light of Hanukkah does not intrinsically have kedusha, but nevertheless, shlo yu mitzvah, b'zir yisolav, you still shouldn't treat the mitzvah casually and in a degrading way by using it, for example, to count money in front of it.
So why do we say kedusha im haim if they have no kedusha?
One second, where do we say Haneris Halal Kodeshim, you're right. Okay, so, well, first of all, we're not done the discussion yet, but the point is that Rav Yosef is saying, even if you argue that the candles themselves don't intrinsically have kedusha, but nevertheless, the fact that it's used for a mitzvah gives it a certain kedusha, it has a kedusha of the mitzvah, and therefore you shouldn't be treating it in a degrading way, the same way as the blood from Kisui Adam. And now, continuing that discussion, Bo Minem Rabbi Shurban Levi, they asked Rabbi Shurban Levi the question, Mauli, stop it, and the reason why we're going to digress from Hanukkah a second, I'm going to get back, and we're going to get back to it in a minute. So they asked him a related question, Mauli, stop it, Minoya Sukkah Kol Shiva. Are you allowed to use the Sukkah decorations during any of the 7 days of Sukkah? So you have various things that you hang in the Sukkah for decorations, or are you allowed to use them during Sukkah? Amrula, so your Shurban Levi answers them, Hare Amru, also Lahautus Mois, Kenegat Ner Chanukah. We just said that you're not allowed to count out money in front of the Ner Chanukah, so it's the same kind of thing, the same way as we're saying that you shouldn't treat the mitzvah of the Ner Chanukah casually and use it to count out money, the same way you shouldn't use the Ner Chanukah casually and use them for something else. Amr of Yosef, Sir of Yosef says, Morej Avraham. The master of Avraham, Rashi says, Loshen Tmeyohu. It's a loshen of surprise, like in Yiddish we say Gotten. Toli Tanya, but Deloy Tanya. look at this. What is Rabbi Shimon Levi doing? He's making something which we actually have a b'risa for, rely on something which doesn't have a b'risa. Namely, the din about not using the noye sukkah, we have an actual b'risa that says you're not allowed to use them during sukkah. As opposed to not counting out money in front of the Ner Chanukah, there's no b'risa to it. We just had a statement of Amiroyim, we had a statement of Rav Asi saying that you're not allowed to do it. So Rabbi Yisrael and Levi has it kind of backwards. Why is he saying, I can prove that you can't use the Noye Sukkah based on the fact that you can't count out money in front of the Ner Chanukah? If anything, it should be the other way around. The Noye Sukkah, we have a b'risa. We should say, once we see that you're not allowed to use the Noye Sukkah, the same way you're not allowed to count out money in front of the Chanukah menorah. Sukkah Tanya, Chanukah Lo Tanya. He says we have a b'risa explicitly that says the din about Sukkah. We don't have an explicit b'risa about the din of Chanukah. We only had Rav Asi saying that, who was an Amora. Namely, the Tanya, we learn in a b'risa, Sikacha Kehochasa, if a person puts up proper schach on his Sukkah, and then the Itra, and then he starts decorating the Sukkah, Bikromim over Sidinin Hamatsuyorim, he decorates it by hanging over there colorful cloths or sheets with designs on them. The Tolaba Egoizim, or he hangs in it as a decoration, hangs from the staff nuts, afarsikin, or pears, peaches, rather, shkedim, almonds, the rimonim, or pomegranate, or pachile anovim, or clusters of grapes, ba'atoris shoshibolim, or crowns made out of wreaths, whatever, made out of stalks of grain, so like he took stalks of grain and wove them together to make crown-like things. Yenet shmonim or slosis, or he hangs in there little containers of wine or oil or fine flour. I'd like to see a sukkah decorated like that, by the way. Anyway, also the stopic man on Mitzvah Yom Tov Achon Shachag, all of those things, you're not allowed to use any of these things until after the eighth day of Sukkot, or in the outside of Israel, even the ninth day. If he made a tnai on them in advance, that, the Gemara explains elsewhere, Rashi brings it over here, the tnai has to be that he says, Beina Shmoshes, when Yom Tov is coming in, I'm not keeping them off limits. If he didn't make that tonight, then once Ben HaShmoshes of the first day of Yom Tov comes, then they become Mukta, and then they remain Mukta for the entire Sukkot. If he made this tonight, that at the beginning of Ben HaShmoshes, that during Ben HaShmoshes, he's not keeping them off limits, then he would be allowed to use them, during Yom Tov. And Shulchan Aruch brings an opinion, I think, of the Ramban, that says that actually you would have to make that tonight every day of Sukkot to be on the safe side. Anyway, the point is that we see that there's a b'risa that says they're not allowed to use the Noye Sukkah without such conditions. So therefore, the question is, why is Rabbi Shimon Levi deriving that from the din about Chanukah when instead he should have quoted that b'risa? Tosfos discusses over here a couple of things in that connection. First of all, we find as far as the Esrog, that the Esrog, you actually are technically allowed to use the Esrog that you use for Sukkot. You are technically allowed to use it to eat, for example, on Shmini Atzeres, at least in Eretz Yisrael. And in Chutz La'aretz, it's not so simple. But why would it be different with Sukkot decorations? The Tosfos says the reason is because the Esrog, the Lulav and Esrog, you only take the first 7 days of Sukkot, as opposed to, and you don't take it on Shmini Atzeres because of the Sukkot. The only reason why it would be also on Shmini Atzeres in the first place is because Bein HaShmoshes of Hashanah Rabbah going into Shmini Atzeres, it's still also because conceivably you could take it during that time, as opposed to so that's the only consideration, as opposed to when it comes to the Noye Sukkah outside Eretz Yisrael, at least we sit in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres to be on the safe side in case it's the 7 day of Sukkot, and therefore it remains also on Simchas Torah as well. Tosfos then points out another point, a separate point also, which is, we're saying over here you can't use the Sukkah decorations because Shaloh Yud Mitzvot Bezuryas Olav, in order that Mitzvot shouldn't be treated casually. It seems from other Gemaras, in fact later on in Al Masechta, at the end of the third parak, that the reason is because of Mukta. So Tosfos says actually we need both reasons. If it was only the matter of Mukta, that would only make it also on Yom Tov. It wouldn't be also during Chol HaMoed. If it was because of the Zoyin of Mitzvah, then it wouldn't be also if, let's say, the Sukkah fell down during Sukkot. The fact that we have both reasons, because of Bizuri Mitzvah and because of Mukta, explains why it's also on Yom Tov and on Chol HaMoed, as well as why it's also even if the Sukkah falls down. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, the point is, again, that we see that there's a braisa about sukkah. So why is Rabbi Shimon Levi quoting, why is Rabbi Shimon Levi having to derive from the case of Hanukkah to the case of sukkah? Elo, Amar Rabbi Yosef Avuhan Dekulu Dam. So Rabbi Yosef is actually, you're right. Properly speaking, what it is all of these things. We should be, instead of learning sukkah from Hanukkah, for example, all of them we should be learning from Kisui Adam. Whereas we just said Kisui Adam, you have a mitzvah, you're not supposed to cover it with your foot. So by the same token, with all other things involving mitzvahs, you shouldn't do them in a way that you shouldn't do them in a way that that you treat them casually. So therefore, that so from Kisui Adam, which is a Din D'Oraisa, from that we would learn to Hanukkah, and from that we would also learn to sukkah. Okay, so that's the maskana. Therefore, you're not allowed to use the light of the menorah for anything, even counting coins, for example. Okay, Ismail. Now we have another discussion. We're going to quote three machlokas in of Rav and Shmuel, where now we have a general rule in Shas that says when we have a halacha, that when we have a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, usually the halacha is like Rav when it comes to dinu ita v'heter, and like Shmuel when it comes to dinu mamonos. So now we're going to talk about three cases where it's matters of Isser and Heter, and the halacha is like Shmuel in the three of them. So Itmar, number one, Rav Omer Ein Madlikin Miner L'ner. Rav says you're not allowed to light one candle of the menorah from another one. Well, Shmuel Omer Madlikin, Shmuel says you are allowed to. Number two, Rav Omer Ein Matirin Sitzis Mibeged L'beged. Number two, Rav says that you're not allowed to untie Sitzis from one piece of clothing to tie them onto another one, because it would be a bizoyan to the mitzvah of the first one. Or Shmuel Amar Matirin, and Begel Begel, Shmuel says you're allowed to. You're allowed to take tzitzis off an old talus and put it on a new talus. And number three, Rav Amar Ein Halacha Kedav Shimon Begrira. Number three, Rav says that when it comes to dragging things on the ground on Shabbos, the halacha is not like Rav Shimon, who allows it, where we have the concept called Dover She'en Meskaden. We've touched on it before. You have a case where you're doing something on Shabbos, which may or may not, actually, I don't think we touched on it before, but whatever. We're going to discuss it here and there throughout the Bethesda. You have a case where you do something on Shabbos where you're not necessarily thereby going to do a malacha, but you might. So the classic example is called Dover She'en Meskaden. Classic example of it is, for example, you're dragging a bench on the ground, a bench or a light bench or whatever, where you might dig up the dirt as you're dragging it. You might not. So you have a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says it's allowed. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not. In general, therefore, Rabbi Shimon says Dover She'en Meskaden is mutter as long as it's not tikkureisha, as long as it's not inevitable that's going to happen. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. We'll talk about it more, and we'll talk about it more later on in our Masechta, including later on in our Perek. Actually, we'll discuss it. So we're saying that Rav holds in halacha Rav Shimon Begrira. The halacha is not like Rav Shimon. Therefore, you would not be allowed to drag that bench on Shabbos. Or Shmuel on halacha Rav Shimon Begrira, whereas Shmuel says the halacha is like Rav Shimon in that. So those are the three machlokes. Amar Abaya says in this connection, Kol mili gemar ovid kerav, everything that my Rebbe, meaning Abaya's Rebbe is Rabba, everything that my Rebbe did, ovid kerav, he would always follow Rav when it came to matters of Isser and Heter, because as we said, the usual rule is when you have a machlokes of Rav and Shmuel in matters of Isser and Heter, usually the halacha is like Rav Shimon, is usually like Rav. Levar mehani tzlas to ovid kishmuel, except for these three that we just mentioned, where Rabba followed Shmuel's opinion. These three, madlikin miner l'ner, that you can light one light of the menorah from another one. Umatirin beged l'beged. Number two, that you're allowed to untie tzitzis from one beged and tie them onto another. And number three, v'halacha k'rav shimon begrira, and if the halacha is like Rav Shimon as far as dragging things on the ground, Titania, namely Rilun and Brisa, Rav Shimon and Megur Odom Mite Kiste Besatzol, a person is allowed to drag on Shabbos a bed or a chair or a bench, or Rovad, Shalei Skavim, Lachas Kodesh, as long as he doesn't intend to make a groove in the ground, in the dirt, while he's dragging it. So we're saying that Shmuel holds, that that's allowed, because Shmuel holds, the halacha is like Rav Shimon, and the halacha is like Shmuel. Okay. So now let's go back and work on Rav's opinion over here. We said Rav says you're not allowed to light one candle of the menorah on Hanukkah from another one. So Yosef, and that would apply, by the way, whether we're talking about within one menorah, let's say, for example, on the third night, you have three candles over there, so can you light the third one from the second? It would also apply if, let's say, you have two different people are lighting, and one of them is going to light and one of them is going to light the candle of the menorah from yours. Okay. So Yosef Ahumin Abonon Kamed Rav Abba Ba'aba, one of the Chachamim was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Abba Ba'aba, the Yosef Akamar, he was sitting and saying, Taimed Rav Mishum Bizui Mitzvah. Rav's reason is based on the concept of Bizui Mitzvah that we were talking about before. Just like we said before, you're not allowed to count out coins by the light of the menorah because it would be a bizoy into the mitzvah. The same way, you're not allowed to light one lamp from another, you're not allowed to light one candle from another one because of Bizui Mitzvah. Because, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, what it is you're not lighting one candle directly from another necessarily. What you're doing is you're taking a match or a piece of wood or something, which is not in and of itself part of the mitzvah, and lighting it from one candle and then using it to light the other one. So therefore, it's a bizoyan that you're using something which is not part of the mitzvah and lighting it from the candle of the mitzvah. So that's what Rav Adabar says. So this Talmud had said that in front of Rav Adabar. Omalukus, Rav Abba Ba'aba says to his other Talmidim, Loititisule, don't pay attention to what he's saying. That's not Rav's reason. Rav's reason that you're not allowed to light one lamp of the menorah from another is based on weakening the mitzvah. Because, now it's true, of course, when you light one candle from another, you're not actually taking away from the flame of one and giving it to the other, but it looks a little bit like as if like you're taking something from one. You're taking a little bit of the oil, you're taking a little bit of the substance and whatever, and transferring it to the other one. So Rav would say, therefore, it's also. So the Gemara says, my benayah, what's the practical difference between the reasons, whether we say it's because of bizui mitzvah or because of weakening the mitzvah? The answer is, ikar benayah dekamadlik mishraga l'shraga. What if you're lighting one candle directly from the other one? So let's say, in other words, you're not using a match in between. You're taking, you yourself lit your menorah. Somebody else now, let's say, takes the lamp from your menorah, let's say, and reaches it over to his menorah and lights it. Or you yourself use, let's say, the third candle and reach it over next to the second one. Would that be allowed? The point is not. If you say it's a matter of bizoyan for the mitzvah, then you don't have a problem with that over here because both candles are part of the mitzvah. Therefore, we shraga l'shraga madlik. Therefore, you are allowed to light one from the other. Whereas if we use Rav Abba Ba'aba's reason, that the reason is because it looks kind of like you're weakening the mitzvah, mishraga l'shraga nami also. Then it's also even if you're going directly from one candle to another because you still have this appearance of like you're taking something from one and giving it to the other. Okay, so that would be the difference between the two reasons. So that's why Rav Abba Ba'aba is telling us somebody, don't pay attention to that Ahumin Abbanon, who says it's because of Bizui Mitzvah, where the implication is, in other words, that Rav would allow it if you're lighting one directly from another. No, Rav wouldn't allow it even if you're lighting one directly from another. Okay. The Gemara says, Mosti Rav Ivya. Rav Ivya says, I have a contradiction. To this that Shmuel is saying, we have two different ways of understanding the Machlokes of Rav and Shmuel. Is it that they're only arguing about where you're using a piece of wood or some other candle or whatever to transfer the light from one to the other, where Shmuel would say it's allowed and Rav would say it's not? Or are they arguing even when you're lighting one directly from another? So the Bidya says, look, we have a mission, we have a Braisa that tells us follows. Sela shal maitha. If you have a coin of Maaser Sheni, you previously used this coin to transfer the Kedusha of fruit of Maaser Sheni onto this coin, where again the idea is eventually you're going to take the coin and you're going to bring it to Yerushalayim and you're going to buy that equivalent amount of food and eat it in Yerushalayim. So such a coin, Ein Shoklin Kenegda Dinrei Zahav, you're not allowed to use it to weigh opposite it gold dinrim. Meaning, in other words, let's say, for example, your sella is a known weight. You know, coins in those days weren't made using automatic processes like they do now. Every coin was handmade, and they wore down after a while. So you'd have coins were sometimes slightly different in weight. But let's say you have a sella of Maaser Sheni, which is a known weight. Now you want to weigh against it other coins to see whether they're the proper weight also. So you're not allowed to do that. Even if you're going to use those other coins in order to be mechalal other Maaser Sheni. So what's the point? If you're going to say that Rav and Shmuel are arguing even when you're trying to go directly from one candle to lighting one candle from another, but Shmuel would agree that if you're using an in-between, a piece of wood in-between, then Shmuel would agree that it's author, than Holetabit Yurta. Then there's no problem from our Mishnah, because what do we have in this, from this Braisa rather, in this Braisa you have the original coin is like the original candle of Hanukkah. The other coin that you're going, the other coins that you're going to weigh against it are like the chip of wood, which then you're going to use for another mitzvah. Because what are you doing over here? You didn't yet use those other coins for the mitzvah. You're going to weigh them, and then based on that, you're going to use them for the mitzvah of the mechal ma'aseh. So therefore, it's the equivalent of taking a piece of wood and using it to and lighting it from one, or taking a match, let's say, and lighting it from one candle, and then using it to light another one. So if you say that Shmuel would agree that such a thing is also, okay, well, that fits very nicely with this Braisa that says that you're not allowed to weigh, that you're not allowed to use the coin of Maaseh Sheni to weigh another one. But if you say that Shmuel would allow it, even if you're using a match to light one from the other, then wouldn't it be a stira from this Braisa? Because in this Braisa, we're saying you're not allowed to use the coin of Maaseh Sheni, which is an object of a mitzvah, to weigh something else, even where that something else is later on going to be used for a mitzvah as well. That would be the equivalent of lighting a match from one Hanukkah candle to light another one. And we're saying, if we say that Shmuel is saying it's mutter, then how does that fit with this Braisa that says that a similar thing with the coins would be also? The answer is, yeah, but Rabbi says the reason why, maybe in principle you would be allowed to, but we'd make it the reason why the Braisa would be saying, according to Shmuel, that you wouldn't be allowed to do the weighing is it might come out that it's not actually the proper weight. What if those coins, in fact, come out to be underweight or overweight? More or less than he expected, become mafik lo l'cholin, and then he's going to leave them. Mafik lo l'cholin means he takes them out to cholin, but here it's not, there's no taking out. It means they remain cholin. In other words, he doesn't end up using them for the mitzvah at all. So it's one thing when you're lighting a match, for example, from one candle on the menorah and using it to light another one. Once you lit it from one, you're going to use it to light the other one, so therefore it's going to be used for the mitzvah, so therefore Shmuel would allow it. In the case of Maaseh Sheni, what we're saying is you might not end up using those coins at all because you might find that they're underweight or overweight compared to what you expected, and therefore you're not going to end up using them for the mitzvah at all. That's why the Braisa doesn't allow you to do that. Not because you're not allowed to take something that right now is chulin and use a mitzvah thing in order to weigh it, but because in this case, not necessarily are they ever going to become used for kedusha. They may end up remaining chulin the whole time. So that's different, in other words. Mostly Rav Sheshet. So Rav Sheshet says, okay, but I have another contradiction to this that we're saying about not lighting one candle from another one. Let's look at the menorah and the Beis Hamikdash. Now we have like this. You have a pasuk that says Michutz l'Poreichas Ha'Edus Yahalech. The pasuk says that you set up the menorah outside the Poreichas Ha'Edus, outside the Poreichas, which separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the question is, why does there need to be a menorah there in the first place? V'chila oro hu tzarich? Does Hashem really need the light? After all, during the whole 40 years that the Jewish people went in the desert, they went by the light of Hashem. So Hashem provides us light. We don't have to be providing Hashem's light. We don't have to be providing light for Hashem when Hashem is the one who's providing light for us. Tosfos explains the question a little bit differently. The question is not, I mean, all the time, throughout not just the 40 years in the desert, but all the time, we rely on the light from Hashem. Tosfos explains the question is, why would the Kohen need the light when they come into the Beis Mikdash? If you're saying that, you would assume that the purpose of the menorah in the Beis Mikdash was to provide light for the Kohen. But why would they need it? Throughout the 40 years in the desert, the Amud Ha'onan, the pillar of fire, the pillar of cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night, would provide them enough light to be able to see things, and even Tosfos even brings from a Medrash that they would even be able to see inside things using that light. So therefore, so the question is, so why did Hashem say to put the menorah outside the Poreichas, where presumably in order for the Kohen to be able to use the light when they come into the Kodesh, but why do they need that if they already have the light if all those 40 years they have the light from the pillar of fire? Pnei Yeshua explains also that the Braisa's question is based on the fact we already know from Parshas Truma where the menorah is supposed to be. So why over here in Parshas Emor, when it describes lighting the menorah, why does it have to describe again where it is? presumably the reason is in order to say that's outside in the Heichal in order for the Kohanim to use the light. But therefore, there's the question why they need it if they already have, as Tosfos was to say, in the light from the pillar of cloud. Anyway, the point is, Ela, so says the Braisa, what it means when it describes it that it's outside the Parochas HaEdus, means Edus, Tila, Boi, Ola, means the menorah in the Beis Mikdash serves as a testimony for the whole world, Laboy Olam, for everybody who comes into the world, Shashchina Shoda B'Yisrael, that the Shechina rests among the Jewish people. My Edus, how does the menorah provide that kind of testimony? Amar Rav, Zu Ner Ma'arabi. This refers to the Ner Ma'arabi, the western lamp of the menorah. What does it mean, the western lamp? Rashi brings two explanations. Now we know there's Machloisus in Menachos and some other places in Shas, that which direction was the menorah placed in the Heichal? Was the menorah placed that the lamps of it ran from east to west? So in other words, you had, there's one closest to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then the next one further east, and the next one further east than that, and then you have the seventh one is closest to the door. Or did you have that it was 90 degrees compared to that, and it went from north to south? So all of them are the same distance from the door, and all of them are the same distance from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and you have some are closer to the wall, and some are further away from the wall. If we say, so Rashi described it to you, if we say the first possibility that it was north to south, that it was east to west rather, then the Ner Ma'arabi is the second one from the end, the second one in, and it's called the Ner Ma'arabi because it's the only one it's the first one that is west of another one. You have the first one is all the way to the east, so there's nothing, so it's not further west of anything else. The second one in is called the Ner Ma'arabi. If you say that it ran from north to south, so all of them are equally far east and equally far west, then the Ner Ma'arabi, Rashi says, is the middle one, because all the other ones would be facing towards the middle one, and the middle one was made to face a little bit towards the Kodesh HaKadosh. Okay, anyway, so you have, that was the Ner Ma'arabi. Shenosim l'shem and k'midas chavriseha, they put the same amount of oil in it as they put into all the other lamps of the menorah. They put a half a log into each one. And yet, they would light all the other ones from it when they lit the menorah ben ha'abayim. They would light from that one first. And then when they were preparing the candles and they were doing atzavas haneris, they were doing atzavas haneris. That would be the last one that they would do. Meaning Rashi says all the other ones, they would prepare them, they'd clean them out, they'd put in fresh oil and fresh wicks and everything in the morning, but that one would still be burning. And it would still burn for 24 hours, even though it had the same amount of oil as all the other ones. And then only at the end, they would clean it out and put in new oil and new wick, and then light the other ones from it. So we see that there was a nest over there that it lasted much longer than the other ones. In various places, the Gemara mentioned Yuma, and in other places, the Gemara mentions that this didn't happen all the time. This only happened when Jewish people were beloved to Hashem. For example, it happened during all the years of Shimon HaTzadik, but after that, it didn't always happen. Tosfos learns a little differently over here that Bohai Messiah means that it was the last one that they would light. Anyway, the point is that it lasted much, even though all of them had the same half a load of oil, but the Ner Ma'arabi lasted much longer than the other ones. That was the nest. That was the demonstration to the whole world that the Shechina rests among the Jewish people. Now, what's the point though? The point is that we're saying we're lighting one candle from another. Now, in this case over here, with the candles of the menorah and the Beis Mikdash, given the Kvi Neiris, since the lamps are fixed in place at the end of the branches of the menorah, you have actually Tosfos brings two opinions, and Tosfos brings from a Gemara and Menachos that there were two opinions about that. But the Or Gemara is following the opinion that the lamps were fixed in place on the ends of the branches. So they're all fixed in place. Loi sagya de la mishko bad luki. But inevitably, if we're saying that you're going to be lighting one lamp from another one, then it means that you have to be using a match. You have to be using a stick or something. So kasha bein lamander omer mishum bezuya mitzvah or bein lamander omer mishum achusha mitzvah. So either version of what Rav is saying, whether you say when it comes to lighting one candle of the Hanukkah menorah from another that you can't do it because of desire of the mitzvah or because of weakening the mitzvah, either way we see they did that in the mitzvah. So what? So once again, why would it be a problem with the Hanukkah candles? The answer is Tirgumar Papa but Psilas Aruchas. Okay, the Papa says you could answer. They didn't have, the answer is that in the Mishmash, they used very, very long wicks. So therefore, the wicks were long enough to be able to pull out from one and be able to bring it next to the other one. Even if the lamps of the menorah are fixed in place, you're still able to take the wick and pull it out far enough to be able to light the next one and then put it back in. Because it was a long wick. Okay, the question is, so from under Omer Mishumat Kusha Mitzvah Kasha. Okay, but that still ends up with a Kasha on Rav Adar Bar Abba's understanding of Rab, that the reason you're not allowed to do that, that the reason you're not allowed to do it, even if you're not using a match in between, is because you're weakening the first, you're weakening the light of the first one, because you're taking away a little bit of its oil when you're lighting the next one. So we see, but we see that in the Mitzvah Mikdash, they did that. Okay, the Gemara says Kasha. You're right, it's a Kasha. It's not a complete contradiction, but nevertheless, yeah, we would have to explain why, according to Rab, it would be different in the Beth Mikdash versus with the Menorah. Okay, versus with the Menorah on Chanukah. Okay. The Gemara asks, my Havyalah, what's the bottom line with this? What is the actual halacha on this? Are you allowed to light one lamp of the Menorah on Chanukah from another one? Now, Tosfos says, what do you mean? What are we asking? We already said before, the halacha is much more. So Tosfos says one answer is that not necessarily just because Rabbah had said the halacha is like Shmuel, but still that's not necessarily the last word on it. The Gemara wants to see whether maybe after all the halacha would be like Rav. Also, Tosfos then brings from the Rambam that maybe the question is even within Shmuel. We said we have two versions of what Shmuel would say. Would he allow it even if you're using a match in between, or would he not? So then says the question would be, even if we hold, like Shmuel, that you're allowed to light one from another one, or you're allowed to use a match in between, or do you have to adapt the light one directly from another? Okay. So what's the bottom line of that? Amar Rav Huna b'Rei Yehoshua Chazina. So Rav Huna b'Rei Yehoshua says, we have to look at it as follows. We have to ask the question, there's two ways of looking at the mitzvah of the menorah on Chanukah. One way of looking at it is the primary mitzvah is accomplished by lighting it. The other one is that the primary mitzvah is accomplished by having it placed in the correct place. And then the lighting is sort of a prerequisite for that. So if we say, so Rav Huna b'Rei Yehoshua says, Ehab Laka Oita Mitzvah, if we say the basic mitzvah is to actually light the menorah itself, then Madlikin Mineu Lener, then we would be allowed to light one candle from another one. Because then it would be the same as the menorah in the Beis Mikdash. The same way as we just finished saying that the menorah in the Beis Mikdash, they did exactly that. They would light one lamp of it from another, because we said they had long wicks. So we said that according to Rav, it would be hard to understand how that works, but according to Shmuel, it's fine. So again, according to one answer in Tosfos, we're asking over here according to Shmuel's opinion. So if we say that hadlaka oisa mitzvah, then it's like the menorah in the Beis Mikdash, and therefore you would be allowed to light one candle from another one without having to worry about the sakhosha mitzvah. And then there's a problem would only be if you use a match in between, but you would be allowed to light one directly from another. On the other hand, if we take the view that the primary mitzvah is to have the menorah placed in the proper place, and the lighting of the mitzvah and lighting the menorah is kind of only a prerequisite for that, then ein madlikin mineir l'ner, then you would not be allowed to light one from another one. Because even if you light one directly from another one, there's still a little bit of a bizoyan to the mitzvah, because after all, the lighting itself is not the full mitzvah. So it would depend on that. So it would depend on whether Hanocha Oysa Mitzvah or Hadlocha Oysa Mitzvah. In fact, D'Boyalu, because in fact we have a general question about that. Hadlocha Oysa Mitzvah or Hanocha Oysa Mitzvah. What is the primary mitzvah of Neiros Chanukah? Is it primarily the lighting of the candles, or is it primarily that they're placed in the proper place and then once they're there that they're lit? So that's a general question. So Rav Huna b'Rei Yehoshua is saying that the answer as far as whether you can light one from the other depends on that. But in general, we have to figure out what is in fact the answer to that. What is it? Hadlaka or Hanocha is the main answer. So the Gemara says, Toshma, to Omar Rava, let's prove from something that Rava said. Hoya tofos ner chanukah va'omid. Rava says that if a person is holding a ner chanukah and standing there, even if he's standing there for the entire half hour or 50 minutes or whatever that the menorah is supposed to be lit, loy also v'loy klum. What he did doesn't count for anything. So shmamina hanocha is a mitzvah. Doesn't that show that hanocha, having it placed in the proper place, is the fundamental mitzvah? Because that would explain why when he's holding it, it's no good. The Gemara says, no, that's not a proof, because a hosam haroya imel, let's start to who did not get law. No, because if the person is standing there holding it, then people are not even going to realize that he lit it for the mitzvah of Hanukkah. People are going to think that he lit it, that he lit it just because he needs it, because he needs the light to be able to see by. So you can't prove from that anything about whether Hanukkah or Hadlaka is the mitzvah. Okay. Okay, but let's try to prove from something else that Rabbi said. He'd lick a b'snim b'hotziya. If the person lit the menorah inside, where we said before the menorah is supposed to be by the door of his house, so if he lit it inside, which is not where it's supposed to be, b'hotziya, and then he brought it outside, loy also klum, and what he did doesn't count for anything. So we see also, I have laka osa mitzvah. If you say that the havlaka, the lighting, is the fundamental mitzvah, okay, havlaka b'm krema b'inan. Then the havlaka has to be in the proper place. Mishrom hachi lo yosek klum. That would explain why it doesn't count, because he didn't light it in the right place. You have to light the lighting itself, which is the fundamental mitzvah, has to be in the proper place. Eli amat hanocha is the mitzvah. But if you say that putting it down in the proper place is what does the mitzvah, amai lo yosek klum. Why doesn't it count for anything? After all, afterwards he put it down in the right place. Okay, it was already lit, but he then put it down in the right place outside his door. So what's the problem? The answer is not necessarily, because Hosam Nami Haroya Hoemer will soak it with Adlaka. Still not, because you could still say that if a person moves it after he lit it, then you could say that still people are not going to realize that he lit it for the sake of Hanukkah. People are going to think that he lit it just because he needed it, and then he moved it, and then he moved it outside his door once he didn't need it anymore. So you can't necessarily prove from that case whether Havlaka Osa Mitzvah or Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah. Okay, we'll finish up that discussion tomorrow then, Be'ez Hashem, and then we'll continue talking about more dinim of Hanukkah throughout Das Chof Yomi.
When we say Hadlaka or Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah, if Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah, why do we have to madlik anything?
Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah would mean the fundamental mitzvah is the menorah has to be placed in the proper place, and the lighting is a portion of that. So in other words, again, in the second case that we brought over here, if let's say he lit it indoors and then brought it outdoors, we thought that if we say Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah, then that would be fine, because at least now it's placed in the proper place, even though it wasn't lit in the proper place. But we're saying, no, the only reason that's no good is because it's not obvious that he did it for the sake of the mitzvah of Hanukkah. But maybe it would be obvious that he did it. So let's say, for example, to give an example, you know, we said before, let's say, that the menorah is possible if it's lit above 20 amos. So what would be the din? Let's say if a person lit it above 20 amos and then brought it below 20 amos. If we say Havlaka Osa Mitzvah, no good, because he lit it in the wrong place. If we say Hanukkah Osa Mitzvah, then it could be good, because after all, right now, after the fact, it's placed in the proper place.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Tosfos also mentions, let's say, for example, let's say, and we're going to discuss that in the Gemara, so we'll talk about it in the Gemara tomorrow, about the Shem, let's say a cheresh shoti b'katan lit the menorah, or placed it in the proper place. If you say, have laka osa mitzvah, for example, then if a cheresh shoti b'katan lit it, then it would be no good. If you say hanocha osa mitzvah, then even if a cheresh shoti b'katan lit it, then fine, all you have to do is move it, then a pikeah has to just move it to the proper place, and then it'll be good.
But why don't we say both, like Shabbos? Akira v'anacha.
Okay.
We need both to
makal
Shabbos.
Well, I mean, obviously over here you need to have laka, because without have laka, you don't have anacha. But that's the question, basically. Is the mitzvah accomplished just by lighting them, or is it accomplished only by lighting them in the proper place? In effect, yeah, hanocha osa mitzvah would sort of mean both. It has to be lit, and it has to be in the right place to begin with. Yeah, we'll finish up the discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and we'll see what the actual halacha is.
Shkayach.
Well, thank you.
So tomorrow, 7 o'clock as usual.